Welcome to Happy Path Programming. I'm Bruce Eckel.
I'm James Ward.
All right, welcome to Happy Path Programming. We have a beautiful snowy day here in Crested Butte, and we got a good one today. I've been looking forward to this for a while. So we have with us Phil Halsensbees. Did I get that at all right?
Yeah, you got that very close.
Welcome, Phil. Good to have you.
Thank you very much.
So this one is on Pickle, which is a new configuration language that was announced a couple months ago now. And as soon as I saw it, I was like, oh my God, this could be the solution to all of my problems.
Well, and you said new configuration language, like there are others. And I think this is
kind
sort
of stands
unique.
Alone.
And it is. Yeah, it's like the first time. I mean, whatever you call them, they're not really languages. They're more, I don't know.
Declarative.
Yeah, they're just descriptive.
Yeah.
Whatever. And the undertaking a, like saying, oh, what we need here is a language. That's a big step. I mean, that's like, that's very bold, and I wouldn't do it. You know, that's like too much work. So
to create a whole language for just this one domain of configuration.
But it's the right answer.
It does feel that way.
Yes.
So Phil, give us the overview of Pickle. What is Pickle? And it's spelled PKL, I should point out, which should be in the title, but pronounced Pickle, but PKL. So give us the rundown.
Indeed. Yes. In speech, you just at some point forget even to that the spelling is weird, because yeah. Pickle in my head is now just PKL.
But it is Googleable, and I certainly appreciate that.
Yes, that's a smart thing to do.
It's much better than Go. I was thinking of Go,
yeah.
Depending on your cookies, you do end up in a sports league. If your cookies sort of hang towards programming languages, then you're all good.
Pickle will get you to the right pickle.
Indeed. So Pickle is a configuration language, as you said, quite poetically. Thanks for that. But it's a configuration language that recognizes that like an ever-increasing number of outages, if you read about any service outages, is due to a configuration mishap.
Yep.
And the number of outages increase.
Some of the most prominent outages. Oh, we screwed up the configuration.
So it seems a sort of an obvious place for, like, why isn't there as much instrumentation there as we have in our programming languages?
Yeah.
So in my IDE, if I write, whether I write Go or Java or Swift or doesn't matter, I have tremendous amounts of tooling. And in configuration space,
that you're not going to screw up production.
Exactly. And validation can be as simple as, you know, a typo in a YAML file. We've all sort of omitted a space at some point or because of some editor setting a tab creeped in, or, you know, annoying things.
Or a string got converted to a Boolean unexpectedly.
The Norway problem.
Norway problem?
The Norway problem is that in YAML, you can say yes and no for Boolean true and false, but you also have country codes, and strings are not necessarily quoted. So sometimes it's like, you know, Sweden, Finland, and false. Wait, what?
Sweden, Finland, and false. Yep. Oh, because no, the abbreviation for Norway. Got it.
Oh.
Yes. That's why it's the Norway problem, because no becomes a Boolean. Amazing.
Once this that bites you, you will never
forget language design.
And it did seem to solve a problem, right? Because it sort of denotationalized a bunch of stuff. It seemed so much lighter. But then you get these kinds of things, and then maybe there was a reason for all the heavy notation and stuff. there's obviously a space there to solve a problem in. And the problem is, whether it's a typo or whether it's a conceptual error or an administrative error, assigning more processors than you have quota for. These sorts of errors you want to catch before you deploy, because that's how you save outages.
Have some validation up front to help give you some level of confidence that the configuration that you're pushing is correct.
Yeah, it's interesting how we've been, you know, you kind of see this movement towards, oh, here's something that can be automatically checked that people have been doing by hand, let's automatically check it all the time without relying on the programmer to do that. And it's like, when you think of it that way, it's pretty obvious because...
And but this doesn't say language yet, right? This could say UI.
Sure.
And maybe some people who work in UI came to this problem first, we would now do something with UIs that worked really well. Who knows? But if you think about sort of those kinds of constraints and then think about who operates the config, oh, these are people that are used to code. But also, very importantly, this is what I call the 2 a.m. problem. It's someone who knows how to code, but who got paged in the middle of the night, gets woken up, has the reading level of a 12-year-old, and needs to solve a complicated configuration problem.
Yeah.
So, like, make it light, make it easy, make it simple, as much as possible. Know your audience, and then you do get to, you have to either be really good at UI, which these are n-dimensional problems, and I don't know how to stick that in UI. But I'm not a UI person, so who knows? But
so,
in languages,
so one of
it makes
Pickle's
sense.
Goals is to make it so that at 3 a.m. when your pager has gone off, well, hopefully, first of all, that hasn't happened. But if for some reason it has, make it easy to identify where the problem is coming from and make it easy to fix when you're you know, in the middle of the night and your brain isn't fully functional.
Without introducing new problems at the same time.
Right. Yeah. And inherently, you do introduce some new problems, right? Because, like... one great benefit of a static format like JSON is that all the information about this specific machine or this specific instance or whatever, all the information is in one place and is explicit. That's a good thing. So when you start abstracting, you start hiding. But then, okay, if you recognize that that's a problem that you've introduced, can you now solve this problem? And then you get good IDE support, so you get GoTo definition and like debugging tools, that sort of stuff.
Yeah. So by creating an abstraction, we have hid some things or made some things not as visible by the nature of having an abstraction. And that has a trade-off where now you're no longer working with maybe exactly the representation that the thing that's using the configuration is reading. But on the other side, you get all these great additional features, so schemas and functions and reusability with modules and all this kind of stuff. So give us the rundown on some of the Pickle kind of language features and things there.
Right. So Pickle is lazy, which is typically, if you want to do like performance programming, is not necessarily a good thing. If you need control, that's not necessarily a good thing. But if you want to be declarative, if you want the notation to be simple, that's a wonderful, wonderful thing. So we have objects, but these are basically, they have members which are properties. There's some other kinds of members, but we'll get to that later. And but with these properties, they're basically, because they're lazy, they're basically zero argument functions, right? Mm-hmm. So when you don't use them, whatever defines them is not evaluated. So if you write very expensive things about queries over large numbers of files and such, if you don't actually consume those properties, you don't evaluate it. And that's great. Because then you can write a very simple query and let laziness solve it for you.
Yeah.
And so we have objects with properties, and these things... basically, they're your simple hierarchy like JSON, except now you can refer to other fields and define functions. So to say your total number of processors allocated for this thing is the sum of the processors allocated for your logging facility and the processors for your database and the process, etc.
Yeah.
And if any of them change for a specific configuration anywhere, then the sum automatically changes.
Yeah. So there's, I guess the high level of this is that configuration is maybe very mostly hierarchical data. And how do we define that hierarchical data structure, especially when there is potentially relationships across the hierarchy? And so that's what you're talking about with like being able to take some definition of number of CPUs or something and do some aggregation or sum of that number and put it into some other part of the configuration. So how do you define the hierarchy? How do you then do operations across the hierarchy, but do this in a lazy and deterministic way?
Exactly. Yes. And so that's there's an upside and a downside to it, right? So now we sort of bias towards hierarchies, but it sort of works out in practice most of the time because we have config for the application itself, for the infrastructures running on. So you sort of naturally divide and organize your configuration hierarchical, I would say. There are cases where that's not the case. So think of a CI pipeline configuration. Those are directed acyclic graphs, not technically trees. And you can still sort of spin them together by just name reference, because you can just point to the other one and then you tie a loop.
Yeah.
So you can very easily describe configuration for stuff like dependencies, build systems.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's not just about hierarchical configuration, because the DAGs, right? DAGs in the case of like CI configuration, like you do need a different, not a purely hierarchical structure. You need some references, and Pickle can model that as well.
Yeah, because it is lazy, you can just refer in. You can let two separate files modules import each other explicitly.
Yeah.
And you can do that with objects as well. So you can actually
tie them. And you don't get a cyclic issue.
You get a cyclic issue if that model breaks itself. So Pickle only evaluates stuff when it needs to. So most of the time, right, Pickle is used by people who need other static outputs. So then it's typically used as a CLI. And then you evaluate a Pickle program and then you get a JSON and a YAML out or something. Or it's used by service authors or program authors, right? That have that want to consume Pickle as their configuration, but then populate their data structures.
Yeah.
And
that second approach is the one when I started. You're familiar with Gradle, since the mm-hmm. Pickle project uses Gradle, and we had an episode a while back about my attempts to address some of the Gradle usability issues. And I've been picking away at different attempts at different aspects to this. But one of those is on the configuration language for Gradle. And so I started playing with using Pickle as the configuration language for Gradle. And in that case, I was able to take my Pickle, generate the Kotlin files for those Pickle definitions, and then read my configuration and then map that into the Gradle APIs, which are Java APIs essentially. And so, yeah, it was great that I wasn't like the other approach would be, okay, take my Pickle file, now generate a YAML file or something and then parse the YAML file. And it's like, no, like I just want an API to my configuration. And it's cool that Pickle gives you both kind of directions into how you want to deal with your configuration, either programmatic or just a mapping to a static file.
Yeah, no, that's an entirely good point. And I think so it's worth a mention, Peter Niederreiser, as a name drop, he's the person who started Pickle. And the insight that he had was, besides, a language is a good fit here. And many more insights leading to Pickle. But insight that he had was also, I want to do his words justice and think of how he said it, because it was quite good. Did I just lose my train of thought? I just don't think I did.
So configuration, we've got this configuration format, and then we have different ways to process it. And so it seems like that was one of the initial goals of Pickle, was to not just be a mapper to another static format, but also provide the programmatic interfaces to it.
Right. I regained my chain of thought. Thank you very much.
Perfect.
So Peter jumped back and said, look, I can solve these problems that I know that I have, or that I know that people around me have handling services. Or I can take a slightly more fundamental step back and say, how do we keep doing this? Because there's already a bunch of things that say, okay, basically you want static JSON, but you want templating, right? So then you get JSON it, which solves that problem. But now you also have a YAML file because you simply also run on a infrastructure that needs YAML as config.
Right. So and then you need to have different representations.
And normally we duct tape that stuff with other tools and, like, you know, rewrite this JSON into YAML and all these kinds of duct tapey tools. But, like, what if you see the whole thing as one problem?
Uh-huh.
And that's what he sort of designed Pickle for.
Huh. Yeah.
I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think when we explored this at the Winter Tech Forum, I noticed that you had objects, but not inheritance. Is that right?
We do.
You do have inheritance.
We do, yes. We have single inheritance.
Okay.
So normal extends of a nominal type system.
Yeah. So that allows you to have, let's see a practical example here. I'm trying to think if I used inheritance on the Pickle GitHub action stuff that I was working on. It seems like there's places where in their model, you've got like a job, and then a job has steps, and then steps have other things in them. And I was trying to think if there was any place where I used inheritance, and I don't know if there was, but I'm sure I will at some point, as I go further with that, uncover, oh, this thing has some of the same shared structure as this other thing. And so let's create a parent class for that thing. And so that we don't have to duplicate those pieces.
It tends to be that. So you can either do something where you do by composition, just by holding objects inside objects, or you can do something like, oh, I'm gonna, you know, I have five variants of something, let's say of a CI pipeline. So you've got like testing pipelines, and you've got build pipelines, and you've got some sort of basic profiles, and they have a few parameters each that are not relevant for each other. You can just give all the parameters in one structure, make them nullable, and add a condition saying, if it's this flavor pipeline, then all of these things must be there, and those things must not be.
Yeah.
So you can do that, but that doesn't scale really well. And at some point you get stuff that really has nothing to do with each other, and it just gets to be confusing.
Yeah, you're just bloating these definitions when they're not actually shared definitions. And yeah, I mean, it's cool that you can make them default as null, and then you don't have to even think about their existence. But it sure is nicer when your schema can match the reality of how you're going to actually use it.
Yes. And so the design constraint there is, how is it? So typically when you really, like, wiggle down on a problem, the problem itself, the path to the solution is often to find the simplest way of expressing the problem. And so how do you make it obvious what the simple way of writing down the problem is?
Yeah.
And like, that problem isn't solved. Like, I still struggle with a whole bunch of problems I know about and I run into.
Yeah.
But you sort of go for those places where, okay, here there's a lot of friction. Can I make this easier? And there should be an intuitive bridge that solves that problem.
Well, and here's what I hate about declarative languages generally, is that there's no reusability. There's no way to take some common thing and turn that into a function or some other higher level thing. And when we were at the Winter Tech Forum exploring Pickle, we were like, okay, let's start with GitHub Actions. I hate how much boilerplate there is in GitHub Actions. So the first thing that we worked on was, can we start creating a GitHub Action replacement, you know, so I can write my GitHub Actions in Pickle. And there was two different builds that we started, like, okay, we're going to migrate these two builds to Pickle. And the first one was, I don't know, 15 lines of YAML. So it wasn't a very long one or something. It started very simple. And we got it down to like three lines of Pickle. And that's, like, to me, it's like, I just so despise that in declarative languages, there's no ability to do that like higher order structure where I can create a reusable thing. And then that reusable thing can be based on other reusable things. And in Pickle, it's like, oh, like at that point when we got that working at the Winter Tech Forum, everyone was just like sold, like so sold on having a language that allows us to have actual reusability. And so, yeah, that was cool. And we were able to get this all working with knowing very little about Pickle, mm-hmm. and just kind of stumbling through
and guessing. That was the nice thing, is that you could guess and your answers were almost always right. I don't know if we were very impressed with the guessability of the language.
We were expecting a lot of toil,
yeah,
because that's typical in these domains. Mm-hmm. And within a couple hours, we had at least two builds migrated over to a shared module with the GitHub Action stuff in it.
And a pretty good grasp of the language.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess the surface area is small enough, mm-hmm. that it's learnable. The IntelliJ plugin that we were using was awesome. And so, yeah, it was a way more delightful experience than we expected for how quickly we were able to make progress. Typically, when you embark on some project like that, you're expecting days of turmoil. And we, within hours, had stuff working, had replaced our GitHub Action pipeline to use the Pickle file. You know, obviously, we have to still generate the YAML underneath. But yeah. And then there was things that we didn't expect to work. We're like, there's no way that's going to work. And then it just worked. We're like, mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah, because of the strength of the language. So have you thought about using it as, I mean, this came up this morning, a build system. In other words, can I replace, I mean, not yet, because James pointed out, well, you need an engine beneath it. But is this been on the board?
Has anyone other than me explored defining their build with Pickle?
Yeah.
Yes, people have tried that. And there's someone on, did I see it on a Discord or did I see it on a, I saw it maybe in our discussions or maybe on a Discord discussion somewhere, that someone was working on their build system. The thing that I'm still working on that I'm not entirely content with is multi-stage definitions. Mm. So build systems, as long as it is a straightforward dependency definition, Pickle's already there. It's like comfortably there, and you don't think about it. You just write it down. But when the result of a stage in your build needs to inform the config of what needs to go next, and you want that to happen in Pickle, so when you run Pickle multiple times, as it were, that's not clear to me yet what that looks like. Other than, of course, just multiple Pickle files, one for each stage, where you just provide these things as inputs.
Yeah. So in the case of Gradle, where I haven't tried to go yet in my explorations with using Pickle is like task definition. And I think that's an example you're talking about where I need to define a task. And it turns out that the output of that task gets used as an input for another task. And that's where things may get a little tricky. So maybe purely if I'm not doing kind of task definition or any kind of runtime dependent information, then something like Pickle could work. But as soon as I get into a space where I need programmatic runtime outputs to then be used as inputs elsewhere, that's where things get a little bit trickier.
Yeah. And like it can be done, but it's just not it to me it feels less fluent. And I'm not entirely sure yet, because it's, you know, it's configuration language. It's supposed to stay simple. So you also don't want to stick too many bells and whistles in. So I'm not entirely sure whether it's a pattern that is the answer to this rather than a language feature or you know.
Yeah. And that's one of the things I've been curious about with Pickle. And this relates to what I've dubbed Goetz's Law, Brian Goetz, where he stated, and this was summarized from some tweets by him, but something along the lines of every declarative language slowly slides towards being a terrible terrible general purpose language. And that's, I think what you're highlighting is this like gravity to trying to pull this declarative, you know, this language that has all these constraints for good reasons on it, eventually getting pulled down into, oh, but we just need this one other thing. And so how are you looking at that? Like how do you know where to set the boundaries for, no, we're not going to do that?
I mean, in part, it's just a prioritization thing. It's a small team that works on this. So we're three people in the core team. Dan and Islon are my colleagues there. And so that prioritizes stuff with limited capacity. But then more so, like for fun, every once in a while, we or other people write like advent of code stuff in Pickle. That very quickly runs out.
Yeah.
If somebody reasonably says, "Hey, I'm getting a like out of memory error, I'm getting an overflow here or a thing," because I tried to do this heavy computational algorithmic thing in Pickle. Well, you know, sorry, yeah. Like that's not a priority. We have other scalability issues where we do have priority, yeah. And scalability in config is much more. For example, how do you maintain large monorepos of configuration, right? Infrastructure as code sort of design philosophy, yeah. Where you have multiple teams maintaining multiple services all together in one sort of pattern in one monorepo.
Yeah.
How do you manage that? How do you make that scale? How do you deal with separate ownership and versioning and these sorts of things?
Yeah. 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 So it seems like there's, some just resource constraints on how far you can take Pickle. And then there's it seems like a desire to keep, to maintain the ability to deterministically create static representations of the configuration. And if somebody wants a feature that would break that ability to create a static configuration, then at that point you're like, maybe we've going too far or something.
Those priorities for sure. We want reliability in our type system. We want so although the language itself is technically entirely dynamic, we do try to make it so that the IDE can actually statically analyze the types so that it can inform you without actually evaluating anything.
Uh-huh.
And so that's a little bit cheating, right? We take the best from both worlds because fundamentally, it is dynamic, and fundamentally, the source of truth is the interpreter. But ideally, you have on-the-fly type information.
Yeah, yeah. And in my usability of it, that's worked well. You know, the code hinting is fast and accurate, and I certainly appreciate that.
Why, thank you. No, but it does. So that's certainly a design sort of element that we aim for to keep, because that does something to simplicity for the configuration space problem.
Yeah. And
so technically it's Turing complete. So we could argue, you know, it's a programming language. It's a general purpose one. Yeah. It isn't.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's kind of, I mean, it looks like you've tried to do a lot of functional-ish things with the language. Like everything is immutable, right? You don't.
Yes.
There's no variables. It's only values. Is that right?
Yes, this okay. is correct.
Okay, so that puts the
we have variables local to expressions because we have let expressions. So the language purist in me now feels that I almost lied to you. We do have variables, but not in the reassignable sort of sense.
Well, oh god, yeah. This argument. It's like, yeah, I've had this argument before. It's like if you're going to call it a variable, that means it can vary. So otherwise, it's a value.
I'm like mathematicians sometimes disagree. I'm perfectly happy to leave it there.
Yes.
This is not a principal matter.
yeah. And it's really helpful to just say we only
it's
have
immutable.
Values.
Yeah.
It's immutable. Everything's immutable.
So other language features that are worth highlighting. So we talked a little bit about reusability, and reusability I think has multiple forms. There's templates, there's objects, there's functions. Then you can package those things into modules and share your modules.
And we were going to ask, are there higher, I mean, do you have higher order functions?
Yeah, I mean, technically, functions are first-class values. There is a notational thing. The thing that you write down function foo for is not, you can't refer to foo without calling it. So if you just type foo without the parentheses, you don't get an object that represents the function.
Gotcha.
So you don't have that, but you have lambdas instead. So you can wrap it in a lambda.
Yep.
That's a little finicky sort of thing. So they're not quite first order, but...
Okay. Yeah. But it's possible.
So reusability, it's amazing. It's so great to have the ability to have all those different ways of having reusability. So I think, I don't know, anyone want to say anything about reusability with Pickle? I think it's one of the best things about it. But.
It's, you mentioned type like templates and values, and that's a very good point because reuse of values is a very common pattern in config. And a thing that I've been running into now talking to users picking it up who are very enthusiastic about it, who get it. Like when I see the code and I go, okay, clearly you're thinking in the same patterns that we're thinking in. One thing that isn't quite as obvious that Pickle can actually do really well is it can use file name structure, directories, to inform a bunch of stuff. So you can read the name of a file. That's very useful in structured configuration in a place. So for example, if you have an object where I published code yesterday, which is game state, or game model rather.
Okay.
So they define factions, and factions have buildings and units, and these comes in types and stuff.
Huh.
And then the file name is the name of the building, and then there's a field called name, which is the name of the building, and then there's an escape field with hyphens and such, because you need a slug. So you have all these different variants of essentially the name. You can all of that derive that from the file name.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool.
And Pickle does that very simply. You can do that in the template so that you never ever see it.
Yeah.
But you just say this is a unit in this game model case. And a unit means, we have these fields, but also these values are automatically derived from the file name.
Yeah. Yeah. So derived properties, that's a huge thing for reusability. And being able to run functions on values. There's a bunch of string functions out of the box. And then default values, another great language feature, makes it reuse just more concise. Cause if something has a default value and I don't need to override it, then I don't even have to see it or care that it's there. So that's a good one.
You were going to ask about like reading a version number off of the GitHub.
Well, then we discovered it. So one of the use cases that have been curious about is the whole area of side effects. And so I think generally Pickle doesn't support side effects, except there are a few places where you can reach out to the external file system or external network or an environment variable. And those become essentially like the way to have some side effect in your Pickle configuration. So yeah, give us the rundown on your thoughts around side effects. How you decide what side effects should be allowed and how that ends up working in Pickle configuration and keeping it deterministic in air quotes.
Yeah. So I mean, letting it be deterministic is sort of a goal, and you can't reach that entirely, right? So what's the other one? Works on my machine.
Yeah.
So the works on my machine problem, we try to minimize that. You can read environment variables. So, you can read files. So maybe you still run into works on my machine problems, but these seem simple and like detectable and resolvable. And so we do allow inputs because that is often necessary, but all inputs are cached. So you can read an HTTP resource, but it doesn't mean you can like back and forth on an API, because if you have the same request twice, you will get the same answer twice, even if the service would give you a different answer.
Interesting. Yeah.
Because every resource is cached by its URL. And as an upside, it makes Pickle much more predictable, much more reliable, and much more intuitive. So lower surprise, basically.
Yeah.
And that's the main
side effects, gives you mostly deterministic behavior. And when needed, there's a bit of an escape hatch there. So the use case that Bruce was pointing out is one thing that I often do in my Gradle builds is I read the Git tag to determine what the Gradle version should be set as. And one way to do that with Pickle would be to just pass it in through an environment variable, but then I need to move potentially my, you know, move the logic that sets that environment variable out to somewhere else. But then when we were reading through the documentation, I didn't even know that the other possible side effects were reading a file. And so it seems theoretically possible that I could read, you know, the Git information from a file or something like that, which maybe, I don't know how hard parsing or reading that file is. But anyways, it seems like maybe there's some potential way to get to what I was trying to do there. There certainly is through environment variables, but maybe through the file access.
If the file in question is JSON or YAML, we actually have parsers for that in Pickle that you can use to consume it as if it's a Pickle structure.
Yeah.
But so for that kind of scenario, that we do have that instrumentation specifically for that, so that you can read that, you know, Git repo state or something,
yeah,
but only once per execution. And that's a distinct choice. That's where it's not a general purpose language. That's where it really has that application of configuration in mind.
Yeah. Well, in that use case, that would be really fine to have that single read. That would be fine for that particular use case.
Right. I have thought about, just to nerd out, and if this is too far down the rabbit hole for your taste, then by all means let me know, but about the DAG problem, because you can use Pickle as a library and because it is lazy, the thing, when you use it as a library, you can make consecutive calls to read properties.
Uh-huh.
And since properties are only evaluated when asked for them, you could basically ask for the stage one result. Interpret in your programming language whatever you need to interpret, run your build stage, read your file, inform it, and then in the next stage have Pickle read an environment variable that you only set when you call back into Pickle.
There is a potential way to create a Turing complete system there with
but you don't have a feedback loop unless you build it explicitly,
right?
And that means that it's still like very unlikely that you shoot yourself in the foot.
Yeah. So other features that are worth highlighting, nullability being built in. I love, you know, I've been doing a lot of Kotlin, and so there's, it definitely seems like Pickle has some common language features with Kotlin, like nullability. And it just is one of those things where I'm like, oh, thank God that's in there. And that I don't have to deal with null pointer exceptions and all that. So, and then the nice, like, does Pickle use the Elvis operator for a default value on a nullable? I forget.
We have the double question mark.
Okay. Double question.
But yes, null coalescence is extremely important. Like nullability is nowhere near as comfortable without that.
Yeah. Yeah, and for configuration, like the last thing you want is to have a null like crash your production system. So yeah, having that in there is huge. And then I think the other language features, I think that there's something like sumtypes in Pickle. Am I remembering that correctly? Like the ability,
so
it's like an enum, right? There is enum, so it's essentially like the way to create a sumtype.
Enum is also a little bit of a term that depends what language you're from, how you interpret it. Enum is a different thing in Swift than it is in OCaml, and it's different there than it is in Go. Yeah. We have union types, and the sort of the base case enum, where you just have static labels, basically a subtype of int, is a union of string literal types. Yeah. So string literal types is where the type is one string constant, so it can only be precisely that string, is incredibly useful.
Oh, I love this.
When defining your hierarchy.
Yeah, when I was doing the GitHub Action thing, it's like there's, let's say, platforms. And platforms in GitHub Actions, you know, there's 12 different options for platforms or whatever. And the fact that I get like code completion on the possible platforms when I set that property, the platform property, just like, oh, thank God, amazing.
Right, but that it's not just normal, like limited enum. So it's not strictly a sum type.
Right.
It's a type union. So you can do, you know, my dev environment and my prod environment and my QA environment, or string. And that means You get the autocomplete, right? Because the alternatives are known to the IDE, but also you have the flexibility to do the thing.
Escape hatch, yeah.
Yeah, you have the escape hatch for your system where you know what you're doing.
Yeah. Yeah, so just to summarize that, you can define a type, which is Windows x86 or Linux x86 or string, and that gives you the ability to then have a property of that type that can be those two that I said, or just whatever the user wants. So, but that's if you want that. If you really did want to constrain the user to just the two that you have specified, then don't put the or string on the end, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So union types, great feature there. Other. So many out of the box, like string functions, which I've found really handy for, it's like, why would I want to have some preprocessor for my configuration just so that I can like do some little string manipulation in my configuration? So great to just have those things built in, like lists and maps,
listings.
Yeah. Oh, question for you. Give us the reasoning for the naming convention there of listings and mappings, and settings.
Yeah, this
gets weird, huh? Set gets, because there is a set, right?
But we don't have settings.
That would be confusing.
That would be weird. Yeah.
But also the things that we have are structurally not set. So. Because of the underlying framework, we wrote this on Truffle, which is a language framework. You write an interpreter, you get a compiler. It is a very nice and powerful framework, but it does lead to some sorts of operations being more expensive than others for us with immutability and the like. So if you do a whole bunch of like filter, map sort of things on your collections, then at some point that becomes expensive. We didn't optimize for that.
Yeah.
At some point we might, you know, if someone has a bright idea on how to do it, great. But we had sort of basically these two different scenarios. One was optimized for notation, and those are the tings. So the listing and the mapping. And the other one is, okay, at some point you want to do all those computations because, you know, you simply need to sum all the resources that you've defined for your system or, you know, stuff like that. And so the short versions, list, map, set, they are made for computation.
Ah, okay.
And you can go back and forth between them.
Yeah. Yeah, so two different APIs for working with collection structures. Well, two different ones for each type of collection. So list and listings. And so depending on what you're doing, what you need, you can pick between those two for a list structure. So there's, lists, then there's maps, but no set, huh?
So there is a set, but not a setting, because there's this one other language feature that is so transparent in Pickle. I was kind of just hearing you out on language features to see whether you would mention it, because the foundational language feature is amending.
Uh-huh.
So it's where you say this object is like that object except. Yeah. And what that does in file hierarchies is you can say this file amends dot dot dot, which means, you know, go up until you find a file with the same name as me. And then everything else in the file is except.
Huh.
So you can make these things where you have your service definition, and then you make a QA sub-definition that says it's exactly like the normal production service, but with only one core or, you know, on a different cluster or stuff like that. And then that's the one thing that you see. And we also have that in objects. So you can say this object is like that object, except, so you say object name between parentheses and then curly brace. And then you start saying these things are now different from that other thing.
So
and that's incredibly powerful.
An override?
It's an override, yes, but it's a prototype override, right? Like JavaScript objects. A type override.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Because it's value chaining.
Okay.
So amends with settings would be problematic. Is that what you're getting at?
So for collections, amends is additive. Like for properties, if you have an object with, you know, CPUs and memory, then if I amend it and say CPUs is 5, then clearly that should mean it overwrites the existing property. Yeah. But for collections, that's not necessarily the obvious thing. For like lists, it's actually slightly more obvious to add stuff. So if you amend a listing, then you add elements to it.
Yeah.
So that sounds a little finicky, but if you see it written down, it just makes more sense.
It makes sense. Yeah. Yeah.
And mappings as well, right? There you have the ambivalence that if keys already exist, then you change the key. Uh-huh. So then you override. If the keys don't exist, then you add the key.
Yeah. And so was there a challenge with doing settings because of the amending?
Well, if it's strictly additive, you get an order problem, right? Now it becomes very hard to understand what you actually intended. But you can just have a listing and at the end of it say, I want that listing except distinct.
Yeah, and distinct would give you the set. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. And then with errors, you do not have any recovery mechanism. Everything is basically a panic. Is that correct?
Yes, because otherwise you can make errors into a Turing machine as well, and then yeah. So ultimately, you shouldn't want to catch, because if you're doing a catch, you're doing a type of computation that isn't the config domain,
right? Mm-hmm.
And you're making it hard to follow where values come from.
Where do you see people using the exception or panic mechanism in Pickle? What do people use that for?
I mean, they use it for more complicated failures. So sometimes you lay out your config because you have a target system and you want to lay it out the way it's laid out in the target system. But that does sometimes mean that if the target system's layout is not designed to avoid non-existent states or illegal states.
Uh-huh.
So if they are expressible, then they are expressible in your setup, your configuration, in your template. So a way to then to catch that is when you have a null when it shouldn't be. At some point, you have a function that makes a non-nullable simply by asserting, okay, that's a point where it might break. And if it breaks, what do you do? Well, there's no recovery that's meaningful in that position.
Yeah.
So the only recovery is an error.
I see. So you may have a case where you've got some particular setting. In some systems, it can be null and that's okay. But then in some other places, you actually don't want to allow the null, but you want to reuse that property. And so in those systems, you can say, all right, here I'm going to now throw the exception, which is going to panic and not allow the configuration to be generated for that one because I haven't set it.
Yeah. And so there's one other thing that I've started using it for, and that is when you have things that simply fail hard when constraints on types, right? You can have arbitrary functions there. You can say that, you know, a string that only contains letters, hyphens, and digits because it's a name that goes to a system somewhere.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Now, that function, when that fails, you get a regular expression didn't match.
Uh-huh.
This is still a straightforward example. And you see, you know, node name has to match this regular expression. And this condition failed. Okay, that might be comprehensible for someone who experiences the error, but very often there's a distance between the template author and the end user.
Uh-huh.
And so instead of doing that, you can say condition or throw, and then a message that is an actual explanation of the specific constraint that failed.
Nice.
So you have a node name here, which may only contains these symbols because it goes to that system and that system only accepts that and otherwise it breaks.
Yeah.
You know, so you can make it more informative. So you can actually throw is very important for UX is what I'd say.
Yeah. That makes sense. Giving people good error messages. And I just want to come back and highlight this because another great language feature is the conditions. So you can define, and it's been a while since I played with conditions, so you can correct me if I'm wrong, but what I remember is that I can have a type, like let's say a string, and then on that string I can set conditions, must start with an uppercase letter, for example. And I will get an error when I try to actually evaluate my pickle if I try to set this property to a string that doesn't start with an uppercase letter. So I think in functional programming world, we would call this like almost like value dependent types or something like that, where you can't actually construct that string and set it to something unless your conditions are valid. Did I get any of that right?
No, you got that exactly right, except we call them constraints, not conditions. Okay. Other than that, spot on.
There's a bunch of out of the box ones that you can use, and then you can create your own.
So it's a different way to create a type. I mean, because you are, by putting that constraint on it, you're defining a new type.
Yeah.
And you have pattern matching. I mean, not pattern matching, but regular expressions, you said, as well.
We have regular expressions. Okay. But these constraints can be arbitrary functions.
Sure.
So these can be anything.
Right.
And indeed, that is exactly like dependent types. But the downside of a dependently typed language, like an Idris or an Agda or these sorts of things, is that as like whatever you write down in the type, you must provide a proof for.
Yep.
And that proof is in code. But then a whole separate sort of can of problems is how do you now prevent other programmers from ever using that code? Because that code was never intended to be used as a value, and it's very expensive, so you don't actually want to compute it. You know, so it's awful.
Yeah.
It's an awful lot of work for a noble cause. We just check values as they pass.
Yeah, that's the great thing about Pickle. Because of the constraints, it allows you to have essentially value-dependent types, but without all of the pain and headache normally associated with value-dependent types.
Exactly. So you are as expressive in your constraints as with full dependent types, and you have to do none of the work.
Yeah, it's amazing. One of the really cool things about Pickle. And this can apply, you can apply constraints to any type, right? So if you want to constrain an int to be within a specific range, you can do that.
And then think of what that does to union types and collection types. Because if I have a mapping of string to int, then I can put a constraint on the string, I can put a constraint on the int, I can put a constraint on the entire mapping.
Yeah.
And with unions, I can like have all kinds of separate types of things that I'll accept. So it's a super powerful mechanism.
Yeah. And for me, I guess this is the Haskellism or something like that, which I've never really done Haskell, but I love the philosophy of make illegal states unrepresentable. And to be able to do that in configuration, back to where we started in this conversation, was being able to verify that my configuration is correct before I push it out to production. This is just one more piece to being able to do
that. And you combine that with immutability, means that you go, okay, I created this thing successfully, I never have to think about it again.
And that's
great.
And what is it? It's what you wrote down.
Yes. Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, but what if this happens first? There is no first. It does not exist.
That's right.
And where did the idea of constraints come from? Is this, did you invent that for this language, or did you find it somewhere else?
I mean, there is the notion of dependent types that are essentially the same thing.
Okay.
But in this case specifically, it's okay, now you've got string and int and such checking. But now you still make typos. You just don't make it in your YAML structure. You make it in your identifier. But you're still a foot gun away from an outage.
Yeah.
Right? So, okay, now these identifiers should actually be this limited set, or should all comply with this, or, you know.
Yeah.
But the idea...
A port number shouldn't be a billion.
But I could see this concept being used... being added to a lot of other languages as well. That's what I'm...
But you can't in a general purpose language without a lot of challenges, because the typical way that you would do this in a non-dependently typed language is when you would have like a constructor function, and then you would apply your constraints on that, and then you would like return an option to say like, hey, you know, I'm giving you a none back because, or a null or something, because I couldn't actually validate that this was correct. But in the case of Pickle, because it's constrained, it can actually say, I'm not going to actually allow you to construct this type when I evaluate your configuration, because it's been able to run the constraints before construction of the thing. And because it's like, you know, kind of, I'm thinking about it as like a single pass through the configuration processing, it can then stop and say, I'm not going to allow this configuration processing to continue because you did not pass me a valid value for this thing.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Mm. Yes. And it only happens when you need it, right? So the other thing is you can write down you can write down expressions that are not well typed willfully.
Yeah.
As long as you don't use them, you know, that doesn't matter. They don't get evaluated. And so for the constraints, you can write arbitrary functions because, unlike with a normal, with let's say Kotlin or Swift or Java, you compile, right? And at compile time, you have to check the types. That means that you infer all the possible values that could happen in a space. What types do they have? And then check it against the declared types. Hmm. We don't have to do that because at the time that we compile is the same time that we run. So whatever values we see, we can check because we don't have to extrapolate all values.
Yeah.
We just have the values that we actually see.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So being able, not having a compile that creates a program that then at runtime wants to apply constraints, you're in like one phase of now, you know, go through the whole thing and make sure it's all valid.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Hmm. I noticed you have a limited set of output formats that, like, you don't include TOML, for example. Are you going? Is that just because we're just getting started and we will add other output formats?
No, we've even been discussing whether we should be removing output formats, as in. Let me caveat that very importantly. No panic. There is a TOML renderer that we have in Pickle Pantry. So in Pickle, you can write a valid renderer for TOML. Oh. And so we've been talking about...
Because there is reusability. A renderer, and the renderer then does your... So it's great that renderers are not built into it. They're actually just calling other Pickle things to do the rendering, right?
Exactly right. Now, except that some renderings become very involved. It's surprising if you think that YAML was actually intended to simplify syntax, but rendering YAML involves a lot of decisions about, do I actually need to quote this string? And, you know, people prefer unquoted strings, so if I don't need to quote this string, I'm going to put it in unquoted. So are there spaces in? Are there new lines in?
Remember at Winter Tech Forum, we were like reading the YAML spec and we're like, is this thing supposed to be quoted or not?
Yes.
And it's like, what's the correct list syntax for this given thing? And then there was actually differences between the YAML spec version for different ways that it handled those things. And it's like, wait, which version of the YAML spec does GitHub Actions use? I don't even know. You know,
and minor versions, might I add.
Oh my god.
Which is also for the point about TOML is at the moment we're still awaiting TOML 1.1. I think at this point I'm not entirely sure. It might have stalled entirely.
Yeah. So yeah, who knows? Very possible and to create a TOML renderer, and there is one that exists in the Pickle Pantry. One thing I want to ask about first. Is there a future that you imagine where instead of having to have the YAML file for GitHub Actions or Kubernetes or whatever, where I just give GitHub Actions my Pickle file and it deals with it? Or is that not the future that I should hope for?
Everyone in the future will use Pickle, of course. if I can help it, sure. There's just a AWS Cloud Foundation just published their templates, so it's starting.
You just give it a Pickle file, and that's all they need.
You just give it a Pickle file. That's it. That's the definition you give. That's the authoritative definition.
Love it.
So yeah, and I genuinely believe that it solves problems as your reaction, as reactions that we've seen from community. It genuinely solves problems, and people everywhere who work in like systems, whether open source or from large corporations, right, they want to solve those problems. That's why they're employed, right? Here is a tool.
Yeah.
Fewer thumbs, better hammer.
Because at the end of the day, why do we need that intermediate representation? It only is there because it's easy for GitHub Actions to parse. It's easy for Kubernetes to parse and do something with. But if we could give it a more full-featured definition of what we're trying to do on this other system, why not? Why have to go through that intermediate representation that's parsable when I could just give it a pickle file, let it use pickle to then run the pickle, maybe even programmatically, and then get an API to the configuration and decide what the system does, and it's all sandboxed and all the wonderful, you know, constraints that pickle provides. So I certainly hope that we get to the point where pickle just becomes the language and we don't even need the renders anymore.
Because right now with GitHub Actions, to find out whether your thing works, you actually have to run it, right?
To render the YAML and then give GitHub Actions the YAML.
Uh-huh.
And so you've gone from this very nice, it's great that pickle can generate the YAML, but why is it even necessary? I'm just trying to tell GitHub, here is my workflow. Uh-huh. And I don't want to use this very terrible declarative language to do that.
But what I'm saying is that if you're just using YAML for GitHub Actions, you can't check it until you upload it to GitHub Actions. Whereas if you're using pickle, you get a whole bunch of checks.
So that's right. The schema validate, yeah, run. All of the validations that I've started putting into my GitHub Action pickle module all give you some level of confidence. But you're right that GitHub Actions doesn't provide any way to actually validate that the thing actually is valid until you upload it up to GitHub.
Right.
Yeah, and I think so an important bit there is that a trade-off, you said fast to parse, right? And then we already discussed a whole bunch of ambiguities in YAML, so caveat.
Yeah.
But it's also that where is that choice to be fast to parse? Where is that critical? If it's data that your system wrote out, yeah, sure, you want it to be like fast, but then you also trust it. If the whole point is that it comes from human users with different levels of knowledge about your system, calibrated on different versions of your system with different histories, blah, 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 blah. I don't know, different locale settings. So yeah. Different kind of characters sneak in. Maybe that's the side where you need to stick in some, you know, instrumentation to safeguard invariance.
Yeah.
And so that's, if that is the cost consideration, that's a great application for pickle, basically.
Yeah. Well, I sure hope that Kubernetes and GitHub Actions and all these systems just give me the ability to, well, first give me the schema. Like, I want the schema. Like, that's critical. And the ability in pickle to define the schema, amazing. Thank you for giving me the ability to at least validate that this thing is correct before I upload it to you. And then give me the ability to just push my pickle file to you. And so that would be amazing. And this is a good segue.
If I might point out, just on that point, there's also written in pickle a thing that translates OpenAPI spec to a pickle template. So you want the templates. Well, if they don't give you the templates, but they give you the OpenAPI spec, we will give you the tool with which you can get the template.
And I think I saw that you're using that for maybe the Circle CI pickle pantry module. Is that how those are being generated, from the open APIs for Circle CI or something? Maybe it was the Kubernetes
Circle
one?
CI, we haven't done the generate. The Kubernetes one we generate.
Okay.
Circle CI doesn't, I don't believe maybe it, okay. Publish
yeah.
open API.
Yeah, so
I may be wrong, in which case, great. No, this is just because our repository.
So if there's a schema that exists in open API form, you can generate the pickle schema from it.
There you go.
Amazing.
There you go.
So I think it's worth talking for just a second about modules, because in this whole concept of reusability, it's great that me as a developer, I can build reusable things for me and my team. But the fact that Pickle out of the box said, we're going to allow you to publish these modules and then have an import from an HTTP URL for that module. So now you can reuse modules. Amazing. Because now we can have the whole ecosystem of people building pickles and reusing them anywhere. It's just the whole like library ecosystem for configuration. And this, of course, is all supported today in Pickle. And if you want to use my GitHub Action pickle, just import it. It's, I don't know, I don't remember the URL for it somewhere on my GitHub. But you point to my URL and great. Now you're defining your GitHub Actions as in Pickle and you didn't have to write it. And I should say this whole GitHub Action thing that I've been working on, it's not very far along. So it needs a lot more work, but at least is a start and highlights that this is all possible. And another amazing thing about this is you said, when you have a published module for Pickle, you probably also want documentation for that module, because now that we've got a schema, we can now define, we can now have documentation so that people know how to use the thing and know what this property actually means and all that. So you can generate the Pickle doc for your modules as well. Just love it.
Including hover over support in the IDE. I'd like to
add on that tagline. Yeah, exactly.
Which is incredibly valuable when names are in terms of art of the target system and you don't speak that language. Then a little hover over with a little bit of explanation does a lot of work. By the way, you said modules, and you can directly import them through HTTPS. But then, of course, if the host changes the thing that they serve, your behavior suddenly changes. We also have packages, and packages give you versioning and version resolution of dependencies and the like. So if you want to not trust the vendor of your template, don't HTTPS directly to their module, use a package.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's like essentially importing that package to your environment so that then it's kind of statically locked or something to the version that you've pulled down.
Yeah, we publish them with SHAs. So version one has this SHA, and then forever shall it have that SHA.
Yeah. Great. So you can do that initial kind of import to your environment and then never have to reach back out to that HTTP URL because it may go away. You know, we've seen node modules just disappear and that breaks builds. And so Pickle packages allow you to avoid build breakages by cloning that pickle locally. Exactly. And maintaining the SHA reference there so you can be guaranteed that it's not changed. Mm-hmm. Great. What else did we miss that's like, I don't know, great about Pickle?
Well, we also, I think we're going to talk about your aspirations for the future.
That's a good question.
A roadmap, you said, but aspirations, thoughts, ideas.
I mean, so I think we're this one item that I already mentioned, that it wasn't easy yet to write things where you use the results from previous stages. So where you do a multi-stage build a pickle. So that's something that I've been thinking about. I don't know whether that is a pattern or a language feature, as I said. And with that regard, we're thinking of aggregating a bunch of what we think are good patterns, but we also want to like properly put them to the test. There's small patterns, you know, like how you do, if you have a bunch of constraints to check, how do you make a nice user experience and such. There'll be blog posts and there's ongoing discussion in community because we're not necessarily the one and true source of patterns. People are using it and saying, oh, this is convenient, which is great. So a pattern collection is very much in future. And there's ongoing work, right? So we're currently working on an LSB, so to cover more editors with the language server protocol, and also to connect to other more build maintenance and code maintenance sort of style tooling.
Yeah.
Linters and the like.
Yeah, linters, yeah. That makes sense. One of the things that stood out when I first saw Pickle was, oftentimes when somebody announces some new language or new declarative language or whatever, they're like, we've made it declarative so that we can have great tooling. And then guaranteed, like, the great tooling never comes. You know, it's like you said you could have great tooling, but you never actually built the great tooling around this declarative language.
But it's possible.
It just never happens. And out of the gate with Pickle, it's like, oh, you've got your IntelliJ plugin. You've got your VS Code plugin. You've got a build system that can, you've got the REPL. Like, you've got all the, like, things that you've got the documentation for pickles. Like, you've got all these things that people hope to someday get to when they create their new declarative language, and Pickle just has it. And I love that. It wasn't just like, we can do all these great things. It's like, no, Pickle did all the great things. So I appreciate that.
Well, thanks very much. But there's more things, and there's more great things that we don't even know about, because it is fun to see the world pick it up and do stuff with it where you just don't expect it. Like, oh, yeah, that's entirely not what we intended the language for, but it's undeniably a great fit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, the problem you're solving is so obvious and huge. Like, if we're getting all of these failures because of configuration, and they're causing who knows how much money and waking people up in the middle of the night and all that kind of stuff, you know, it's like, oh, obviously we need this.
Yep. Yes, we do. So, anything else to add, Phil?
No, I think we've covered a lot of ground, and I think at this point everyone might be reeling a bit.
Yeah.
Of course, for people to come and have a look, pkl-lang.org. There's communities sprouting up. So Google for pickle things. And that I've really enjoyed the reception, because launching new stuff can go in one of two ways. And so far, this has been an absolute joy, and to see what people do with it is great.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of thank you for doing this.
Yeah,
you're making my life easier.
There's a lot of that, and like a bunch is former colleagues, because they used it before and they know about it and they were looking for it to be published. Mm-hmm. And then a bunch is people who'd never heard of it before, who have no connection to any of these people, and then just sort of stumbled across it and went, oh, this looks fun.
And are you looking at, I don't know, community building, the process of doing that? Because, you know, that can, without some care, you can...
We definitely are. So we the main community that we build is on our GitHub. So we try to be very responsive to discussions. We try to be receptive, and when things, you know, are reasonable requests but won't line up with us, then we try to be receptive of contributions and to make that clear and such. And we do engage with community sometimes where they are. So we do. You know, code reviews, and we have chats and stuff. There's a community Discord.
Nice.
So, you know, there's things that we hang out with, but also there's already a bunch of users that know what they're talking about. So
it
seems to also grow naturally.
Yeah,
which I'm very happy about.
And I, in my experience with you all, the maintainers and the community, it's been really positive. And I've asked the dumb questions and been greeted with kindness.
Always important.
Yeah, it's felt good to be part of that community. And I certainly appreciate your all's responsiveness. You're in the team's responsiveness to my questions and my bug filings and, you know, all that kind of stuff. I feel like it's you've all done a great job of kind of stewarding the community and my interactions with you. So thank you.
And the core team, the three of you, is this all you're doing, or do you have other work as well?
There's generally like other style work. In terms of, I help people hold it right as well. So that's quite a bit of time to sort of design review and stuff, and like, oh, we want to build a system like this. Can you look at that? And which is essentially building pickle, but it does mean that there's a lot of like other technical work that happens, which takes a lot of time.
Sure.
But your focus is all on.
But the core focus is very hard on okay. Pickle.
Yeah,
and that's great. In that regard, it has been very easy for the team to be quite kind and receptive on the GitHub stuff, because people filing bug reports is sort of exactly what we were hoping for, and it has massively accelerated what we do. So, you know,
yeah,
we're doing it for selfish reasons, is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, great. So it works in both parties. Mm. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Phil. Look forward to a very bright future with Pickle, and thanks for teaching us all about it.
A pleasure and a delight.